The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
All right, let's answer your question and give you some good news.
Yeah, I was afraid you were going to say that.
I'm on her side, and I don't know exactly what her side is.
I think you're totally spot on with that.
I sound inept just to help you out.
It's been a rough week, thanks to your advice.
Are you a regular listener to this program?
As much as I can be.
There's your problem.
I would not ever disagree with you because you're so smart. You have a lot of answers to a lot of things.
You don't want to listen to me on the radio.
So what do I do?
I can't give you any direction.
Thank you for empowering me. I needed that.
I'm losing you, buddy. I don't know what you're trying to say.
Well, do you know somebody who does?
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
I've been searching for somebody who does. My wife does. She knows what I'm trying to say. If I could get her to listen every once in a while, she probably would be able to help. Good to have you with me. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. Once again, privileged to be doing the show from the KVSS Spirit Catholic Radio Studios in Omaha, Nebraska, home of Boys Town. I don't know if they were allowed to say that back then. Probably should have been changed to Kids Town. But I guess it is Boys and Girls Town now. Good to have you. The number to get onto the program is my call screamer, Eric Dumont, tells me. He says, you got to give out the number more. You can't just assume people listen all the time. I want them to listen all the time. I want to listen to the whole show. So I figured out how to do it. I'm going to give out the number, but I'm going to give one digit every 3 minutes. So if you want the whole number, you'll have to listen all the way to the end of the program when you'll get the number. Well, wait a minute. You probably wouldn't have time to call in then, right? There goes that theory. Because I was just going to go 8, and then 3 minutes from now, I'll give you the other digit, and you can just kind of catch on. I'll give you the whole thing. 877-573-7825. That is not an easy number to remember. It really isn't. 877-57-EQUAL is much easier. It's acronymically just 3 pieces of information. You don't have to remember all 10 pieces of information, which is interestingly enough because one of the first things I learned back in psychology, I forget what we called it, I think it was physiological psychology, is that the typical digit span that people optimally remember is 7 digits. That's why phone numbers used to be 7. You didn't have to worry about an area code. Remember that? Well, maybe you don't remember that. I remember that because I talked to Alexander Graham Bell right when he had put it out and I was talking to him. No, actually, I didn't. Teresa Tomeo did, though. She knew him. She went to class with him. I think he was a freshman when she was a senior. I think that's the way it goes. Anyway, they made it 10 digits now. Now you got to do the area code. So more and more people, have you noticed? When you ask them somebody's number, they'll say, I don't know. I have it in my phone as a name. So they took the 10 bits of information down to 1 bit of information. Interestingly enough, I would say about half the time that I ask people what their number is, do you know what they say? I don't know. I'll have to look it up. And I say, well, it's probably under your name. All right, the number here, 877-573-7825, 877-57-EQUAL is the number. Tonight, good Lord permitting, I'm heading to David City, Nebraska. I've been noticing something. Been in a number of these small Nebraska, Iowa towns. Towns are kind of put in between the cornfields. They are Americana. I tend to think when I drive through these little towns, what they would look like at Christmas time. Because you see these movies, you know, these Hallmark movies, and they're all the same. The plot on these Hallmark movies is all the same. The girl's going to get engaged to some guy. She likes him, and he's all Mr. Responsible. But then some dude drifts into town that's kind of just this free spirit. You know, he doesn't really exactly know what he's going to do with his life, but he's exciting, and she hates him at first, And then she grows to like him. And then she dumps the guy that she was engaged to. That's kind of the Hallmark theme. But they always have these little towns. And they're all just decked out for Christmas. And that's, I think they could do some of that taping here in Nebraska and Iowa. Because they have those towns all over the place. All right, now to a serious subject. Some years ago, I was in a car with an emergency room doctor taking me to a talk. He was my transportation. He said that something that was scaring him in the emergency room was that he was seeing people, generally younger people, coming in psychosis after having smoked, perhaps not once, but continuously, marijuana. And then he said something interestingly enough. He said some of them didn't seem to be pulling out of it. One feature of psychosis is its cyclical nature. Sometimes it does cycle to more extreme, less extreme. And he made the observation that they weren't pulling out of it. And there was a book that came out. Ooh, gosh, I bet it's been 5-6 years now, from a fella. Don't remember the title, don't remember the fella. But I remember reading a summary of the book. He was making the same case that the marijuana that is now available and is now legal in several states, and 5 more have it up on the ballot in November, not just for medicinal purposes, for anything purposes. That marijuana has exploded in its THC content, tetrahydrocannabinol, the main psychoactive component in marijuana. There's a lot of cannabinols in marijuana, but that's the big one. Well, this just came out, wouldn't you know it? This is from, who said this? The guy that said this was a Dr. Ken Finn, president of the American Board of Pain Medicine. All right, so this guy's kind of a high-profile medical personnel. Sharp, this is the topic of the article. Sharp rise in marijuana-related psychosis. American Board of Pain Medicine president says, cannabis products are produced to have extremely high percentages of THC. Let's put it in street lingo. This ain't your daddy's marijuana. I remember when I used to give presentations on drugs, one of the things that a lot of these advocacy groups touted was, oh, marijuana, it's no more problem. It's less problem than alcohol. The THC content is so low, it's just kind of a mild, relaxant effect. That ain't the case anymore. Let me get this. President of the American Board of Pain Medicine and Vice President of the International Academy on the Science and Impacts of Cannabis. So this guy studied this. High-potency cannabis is being linked to poisonings in young children, as well as psychosis and schizophrenia in an increasing number of regular users. Now, what is psychosis? Okay, that's a very broad umbrella term in psychology, psychiatry. It generally means some type of loss of contact with reality. This is a serious mental disorder. This is where the brain ain't working right. The chemicals, just that we're just beginning to understand all of the complexity of these chemicals, they're not working right. So you hear things that aren't there. You may see things that aren't there. You think things that are crazy, counter to reality. He says, I'm going to quote him. A lot of my colleagues that work in psychiatry and emergency medicine, like the guy that talked to me 5-6 years ago, are seeing a sharp rise in marijuana-related psychosis. As an aside, I know a young man who's now in his early 20s who was pretty actively involved in smoking marijuana. And, of course, he drifted into a psychosis. And he still is in the midst of that psychosis several years later. They have not been able to clear it up. And interestingly enough, he committed a serious, serious crime while under that psychosis, while under the influence of the psychosis. Now, whether in fact he was heading that way naturally without the marijuana, you can't know. But the marijuana was part of his experience. Data from Europe ties these mental health problems to high levels of the THC, tetrahydrocannabinol, chemical in cannabis that causes people to feel high. The European data shows that there is a five-fold increase of first episode psychosis with what they described as high potency THC, which generally is about 10%. So, he says, we are really in uncharted waters in these states where the THC potencies are hovering between 40 to 60%. That's off the charts in hallucinogenic chemical. Want to know something else that's interesting? Talk about drug use affecting kids in the womb. National Institutes of Health came out with a paper last week showing that kids who are exposed to cannabis in utero, in the womb, tend to have, this is scary, psychotic-like episodes by the time they're 10 years of age. Why are the producers doing this? Because they said the more problems the user has, the higher the concentration they have to consume, and the more frequently they consume it, just to get back to that dopamine baseline where they feel, it's scary. States are rushing headlong into making this legal. I wonder when there will be the backlash. But those of you who have called this program, and I've had people in the office say this, that my kid's sneaking away and smoking dope, well, then you better not let him out of your sight then, if that's what he's doing. The stuff is not benign anymore. It's risky. All right, that's your warning. I'm looking up there at the call screen board, so be getting to your calls in a second. Dr. Ray Grandy program. I just like to give you that smiley piece of information there. Program the doctor is in here at KVSS Studios in Omaha, Nebraska. Spirit Catholic Radio, a wonderful network, blankets all of Nebraska. Kind of cool. So I will be with you momentarily.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Do you have an insurance plan that pays for everything, even things you don't believe in? There are options. You can join Solidarity HealthShare, a faith-based health-sharing community. Plus, Solidarity HealthShare can save you money with prices starting as low as $384 a month for families.
Call to see how much you can save. 844-398-9399. That's 844-398-9399.
Hi, this is Vanessa Dunha-Garmo. It's tough raising faithful Catholic kids today. The values your kids are getting from school, friends, and the media are often very different from those they get from you. What's a Catholic parent to do? How can you encourage your children to stay true to their faith? Find out in a new free webinar hosted by Dr. Greg and Lisa Popchak. Join the webinar, Raising Confident Catholic Kids, on Wednesday, October 12th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Dr. Greg and Lisa will share tried and true tips about how to become a more connected Catholic family so that your children will hold on to their precious faith they've received. If you're a Catholic parent, this is not a webinar you want to miss. Sign up today at CatholicHOM.com/webinar. Remember, it's free to attend. Again, go to CatholicHOM.com/webinar to sign up today.
Did you know Franciscan University of Steubenville offers a Master's of Arts in Catholic Studies? Our unique program offers courses from many academic disciplines: literature, biology, art, theology, psychology, all taught from a distinctly Catholic perspective. This 100% online program can be completed in just 1 year. Learn to see the world through a Catholic lens with a Master's in Catholic Studies from Franciscan University of Steubenville. Find out more at franciscan.edu/mcs.
Where did you get that? Oh, man. Leave it up to you to find stuff. Dr. Ray Guarendi, thank you. What kind of doctor? Shrink. People say, where does the word shrink come from? Because long ago, and maybe to some degree even now, medicine men in the tribal places were head shrinkers. They were the folks that had the secret knowledge into the functioning of the mind. So they were head shrinkers. And then that just came truncated down to shrink or shrinkers. And somebody who worked on the head became a head shrink. And then we don't like to do two words when we can do one, so we just do shrink. All right, let me take a look at this here. John from Cincinnati, Ohio. Hello, John.
Hello, Dr. Ray.
How are you?
How are you?
I'm doing fine, sir.
How
about yourself?
I'm doing pretty well. Dr. Ray, I had a major heart attack. I survived on August 30th, about a little over a month ago. And since then, I have three young children. I have an 11-year-old, a 10-year-old, and a 7-year-old. And since I had my heart attack, I've been having a really difficult time sleeping. I've been very anxious, like I can feel it in my body about my family being without me and about my own mortality. And I just can't seem to shake it. I've never been an anxious person before. And I'm getting really very frustrated. I don't like even spending time with my family. It's hard because I'm constantly like on edge. And I just wanted some advice.
Doctors give you a clean bill of health?
Not really a clean bill of health. On October 17th, I will go to see how my heart is doing. My ejection fracture, a measure of how my heart is doing, was about 35%. They expect that it should improve. Based on 52, it should improve, but I'm waiting to get my EKG on the 17th. But I'm feeling good. They say all the signs are good. I'm eating better. I lost 25 pounds. So there's a lot of positive signs. I just can't shake the anxiety.
They like the ejection fraction to be between 50 and 60%. That's pretty much the norm. So apparently what was happening is you had some blockage, and that blockage was affecting your...
100% blockage.
Where? The LAD, the left anterior descending?
LAD, yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm very thankful to be alive.
Well, you know, you must have had some kind of collateral, because for that 100% blockage to not take you down, you must have built up some collateral to go around that blockage.
I think so. And also, I called very soon, and within about 12 minutes, I was at the emergency room.
Are you a religious man?
I am. I am a religious man. I've always been, but even more so since I had my heart attack. I've been praying constantly.
Well, let's do a couple things. Part of your anxiety is probably because of the unknown. At this point, you're thinking, I skipped within a millimeter of death, and I still don't know if I'm significantly back from the cliff. So I got to see. So some of it,
yes,
is that uncertainty. Okay, so you go to the doctor. He's going to tell you everything's heading in the right direction. That's what you want, okay? They took care of you. You're probably in far better health now than you were in the 10 years prior to your heart attack. So that's great. So actually, you didn't know you were at risk. And so you felt very confident and very calm and little anxiety because you thought, hey, I'm doing cool. But now you know you're doing well. So that's the first thing. Second thing, once you get that clean bill of health, at some level, you're going to have to say to God, Lord, I don't know what the future holds, but I am not going to live in anxiety. I refuse to live in anxiety. I am going to replace that with gratitude. Thank you, thank you, thank you that not only have you let me discover this, but we have the technology to cure it. My friend, for most of human history, you'd be a dead man. There'd be no way they would have discovered it. There would be no way they could have done anything about it. But now you live at a time where it's treatable. And that should ramp your gratitude off the charts. Does it?
It does. I am so grateful to be alive.
It is hard to be anxious when you're grateful. Don't avoid your family. Every time you feel anxious, replace it with gratitude and say to yourself, okay, I'm going to feel anxious. So what? So what? This anxiety isn't going to do anything to me. It's just an uncomfortable feeling that I'm eventually going to have to get over when I realize, as the doctors are telling me, that I'm doing fine. That's what you got to do, my friend. You're dwelling on your thoughts, which are probably irrational.
I agree.
And that anxiety is spilling over to your sleep patterns. Because when you are agitated like that, your sleep is shallower. And when it's shallower, you're more prone to wake up. And when you wake up, a lot of times during the night, you feel anxious. So it's all kind of just spilling together. And much of it is based upon the fact that you keep dwelling on this idea, what if I'm not around? What if I have another heart attack? What if I abandon my family? All of that. So that's what's occupying your time. My friend, I want to tell you, you're not going to enjoy the second chance you've been given by God if you keep doing that to yourself. You're in control. It's not the anxiety that's taken over you. It's not some evil dark cloud that's kind of swarmed over your life and said, all right, John, I got you now, pal. I own you. Not at all. Not at all. You're the one in charge, John. Not that anxiety.
I understand.
That's what you got to do. And once you start doing that, you'll see it turn the other way. Little by little, you'll be less anxious around your family. Little by little, you'll be giving it less and less thought, and you'll realize, hey, thank you, dear God, that you've given me this second chance, and I'm going to really make do of it. I'm going to do well by it. Now, I just got one other question for you, my friend.
Yes, sir.
How crappy was your diet?
Between about 30 and 40, it was very bad. The last 10 or 12 years, it had been a little better. But it wasn't great. It wasn't great. And I've been doing a much better job of that since it happened. So I do feel like I'm in better health.
One of the things that's coming out here, John, is that the American diet for heart health is deadly. The American diet is horrid. And many researchers in the cardiac field will tell you that the bulk of, now granted there are genetic components, but the bulk of cardiovascular conditions is dramatically affected by our diet. Dramatically. We eat terribly, the stuff we put in our bodies. And most people just think, I can eat whatever I want because that's what I like in taste, and so I'm going to do it.
Yeah, that was pretty much me.
Well, that's what happens, and that's very common. I had that happen. I was a weightlifter. I was very active. I could eat anything I wanted. So what I did is I ate anything I wanted until I started noticing my ejection fraction was going down. And the cardiac doctor said, your ejection fraction goes down. Sure enough, blockage. Okay, so I radically altered that diet. There's a primer on it there for you, John. God push you in the right direction. Gratitude can help with anxiety a lot. We'll be right back.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
This is one of the reasons why Deacon Dom and I love to travel so much, is because when we look around, you can see beauty anywhere. You can see it in your backyard, for crying out loud. And we should every single day. But it's a very big world out there. And you know how much I love Italy. I have a whole website dedicated to it now. I try to get back there as often as possible for two reasons. Because it encourages me in my faith, because the Catholic Church being there, and because of the beauty. There is something about the different regions and the mountains and the small towns and the villages and the churches. In every single little town has a church. And it could be in the middle of nowhere on the top of a very remote hill. But how did they get this church all the way up here? That in itself is a beautiful thing.
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
What is wrong with artificial birth control? The Catholic Catechism explains that it unnaturally breaks the bond between the two essential elements of the conjugal act, the unitive and the procreative. The unitive element is the mutual self-giving of the spouses to one another. The procreative element is the openness to the act's potential and natural end, life. The truth of marital love is falsified when we separate what God has decreed as inherent and inseparable to the marriage act. We don't unnaturally separate eating from its natural end, nourishment. When we wish to control our weight, we abstain from food. Thus, if for just reasons we wish to control birth during a fertile period, we should abstain from sexual relations. In an age of ecological awareness, church-approved natural family planning, which is both healthy and free, is cause for environmental applause. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
That's a little better, Andrew. That's a little better. Sounds like one of those 1970s cop show theme songs. Leaping over a car. There you go. Always wanted to do one of those shows. I could basically leap over a skateboard if I get a running start. All right, 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL is the number to call to get onto the program. I was told by my call screamer, Eric Dumont, I'm rather presumptuous is the word. Because I don't give out the phone number very often, and I truly don't. And he says, you got to give it off because people come and go. They come and go. I said, no, they don't. They just hang on for the whole hour, don't they? Actually, no, if you read radio statistics, I think the average stepping in and out of a radio show is, what, 14 minutes? Because the vast majority of people listen in their car. I'm going to be delicate in my approach to Stephanie, because she is basically saying, Dr. A, your stuff doesn't work. Now, how do I tell Stephanie that maybe she needs to work on her style? I don't know. I'm going to talk to her. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Dr. A. How are you?
All right. What do you mean it doesn't work? He's only 5 years old. Come on.
Well, we had a really challenging summer, and he's always been especially willful, but I kind of was at my wit's end, and my spiritual director actually recommended your book, and so I gave it a read. I finished it a couple days ago, and it's been great, and so I know that it's going to take a little while.
Wait a minute. Stop right there, Stephanie. Wait a minute. You finished the book 2 days ago, right?
Yeah.
And you are saying, I'm looking up here at the screen here, it says, read your book on discipline. Son doesn't respond. Oh, what? But 2 days.
Right. No, I know. I guess my question is more of just strategies, because
he's particularly tough, right?
Yeah. Well, he's not going to sit or go calmly to where I tell him to, and he's never done that. But, you know, as he's trashing my house and screaming.
Whoa.
And, you know.
Whoa. You're letting him do that?
Well, so that's, I don't want to let him do that. If I were to put him in his room, he wouldn't stay there. if I, and you know, I would even lock him in his room. He would, I mean, the worst thing he did this summer was break a window. And so I just don't know how to respond to that, because I don't want him hurting himself and I don't want him hurting his siblings accidentally.
Are you married, Stephanie?
I am.
What does your husband do about this?
So he works, he's home, you know, not till like 6:30. And it's frustrating because, I mean, he'll be having this humongous tantrum. And as soon as my husband walks in the door, he's like, go to your room. He's like, okay. Goes to his room and sits there quietly.
Well, wait a minute. What happened to all that willfulness?
Yeah, he doesn't react the same way as he does to my husband as he does to me.
Okay. Parents nowadays are experiencing, especially young parents, especially parents who are really trying to do a good job in their parenting, are pretty much replicating you. They think their kid is willful when he's not. He's right. A kid. He's a kid. And he'll push wherever he's allowed to push. Some will push a little harder than others, but your son, who immediately complies when daddy gets home, if he were truly, 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 really willful, he'd challenge his father too. But right. That's one sign that he's not. Okay, so let's right. Lay that aside. We won't call him willful anymore. Don't do that. Here's what you do. You say, it's okay. Me. It's me. It's not him. It's me.
Right.
Got that? All right. Now, I would say a majority of American parents with children, let's just pick an age cutoff, under age 10, cannot say to a child, please go to your room, stand in the corner, write me 20 sentences, put your head down at the dining room table, go sit on the couch, and get cooperation. Without a fit, without an argument, without coming out of the room, without destroying something. They can't do that. Now, that is a pandemic, to use the word, loss of authority among parents. Unbelievable. Parents of two generations ago never complained anywhere near that much about this, because I talked to them.
Right.
So it is the parent. So let's help you. There's a chapter in that book, and the book you're referring to is Discipline That Lasts a Lifetime. It is my top-selling discipline book by far. All right? It is a bestseller. If you want it, those of you listening, you go to my website, drray.com. It's there. It's signed. There's something in that book talking about using the corner. And the reason I suggest the corner, and because you use the word, Stephanie, you use the word strategies. No, it's not a strategy. It's not a strategy at all. It's just something very simple. The corner. You can use the corner on your son anytime you want, 10 times a day if you have to. The problem is he won't go. Right?
Right.
Right, of course. All right, we're going to make him go. But here's what we're going to do. You're not going to keep putting him back because he's got more energy in his little finger than you got in your whole body. You'll lose.
Right.
And he'll fight you and he'll swing and he'll torque and everything. No, you don't want to convey that impression that he is your equal as he defies you.
Okay.
You're going to put him in a corner and then he won't go. And then you simply tell him, well, until you go to the corner, you are on blackout. Blackout means every single thing that he asks for is no. Every single toy, privilege, stuffed animal, dessert, anything is no until he serves his corner time. Now, at that point, okay. He's going to erupt. He's going to go crazy on right. You because his view is, right. I don't. His view here, Stephanie, is I don't have to listen to you.
Right.
You don't have any authority over me. Now, you taught him that. You didn't do it on purpose, but that's what you taught
right.
him. So you're going to teach him, if you refuse me, this is what I'm going to do. Now, if he's a typical five-year-old, which he probably is, within a week, you will have him go to the corner when all you have to say is, please go to the corner. Once you shut him down for two or three, 4 hours like that, he'll immediately go to the corner. He'll ask for milk in his favorite cup, and you'll give it to him in a plastic cup. He'll ask for his dessert, and you'll put a peanut butter sandwich in front of him. You control everything, Stephanie. You go out to eat. He sits and watches. Make a sandwich before you go. He hasn't served his corner time yet. Drive through a drive-through. Get yourself some ice cream. Say you would have liked to have gotten him some ice cream, but he hasn't served his corner time yet. Do you realize the message that conveys to a five-year-old? Which is, I mean what I say. I told you to go to the corner because you were acting up and you didn't. Go to that section in the book. It comes out in great detail on how to do this. It is the single most potent thing you can do to get your authority back quickly. And I guarantee you, in 3 weeks, you will be saying, this is a different kid. This is a totally different kid.
Call from God. Father Mitch Pacwa shares his experience.
I certainly had a bit of opposition. My father wasn't pleased with this at all, and he kept arguing with me. Once when I was 12, he said to me, what do you want to be a priest for? Why don't you be a doctor? You don't have to be a priest to help people. You can be a doctor and get married, have kids. And I said to him then, Dad, if I was a doctor and I help people get better, that would be very good. But later on, they're going to die anyway. So if I'm a priest and I hear somebody's confession and they go to heaven, that lasts forever. So that's better. And he didn't know what to say. And he continued to oppose the idea over the next years. Yet that didn't stop me. And even when he said, I'm going to disinherit you if you become a priest. And on the day of my first Mass, he did. But as I also said to him then, he told me, okay, you're out of my will. I said, Dad, I can't keep it anyway. It doesn't matter. I'm a Jesuit, and we can't keep the money, so it really doesn't affect me. The issue is I'm trying to follow what God, our Lord, is asking of me. And this has been where I have found the greatest joy, that doing what I believe through my own prayer and through reflection and thinking about it and moving from a little boy's idea of what a priest would be like all the way to now in my early 50s, you know, realizing that this is exactly what I think is going to please God the most. And that's what I want to do, to please God.
For information on the priesthood or religious life, log on to www.ewtn.com/religious life.
Stephanie brings up so many good points. Now, she didn't say this. Let me give out the number again because we still have time to take a few more calls. 877-573-7825, 877-57-EQUAL. She didn't say this, but can you imagine what it's like to live with a five-year-old who's going to battle you every step of the way? It's exhausting. You have to try to figure out how to get cooperation from this kid. And the most natural thing is to think it's the kid. Why is he like this? Why does he have to be so difficult? Now, you know what parents say to me about that? They'll say, well, I have friends, and their children are not like this. Well, here's an answer to that. Some kids, by their nature, are just kind of more cooperative. They are. Other kids are normal. That's right. You heard me say that. Normal. They will push on you if you let them. And what tends to happen is you get so frustrated and you go to confession and you say, bless me, Father. Before I had children, I was pretty nice. Now I'm not pretty nor nice. Many people will say to those of you with 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 kids, they can't fathom that many children. They'll say things like, I can't handle the 2 I have. You hear what that says? I can't handle the 2 I have. That is a very common perception among parents. When they're telling you, I can't handle the 2 I have, they're not talking about themselves. They're talking about the kids. These kids are tough. Now, granted, the culture does make it very tough as they get older. Very, very tough. But we're talking 3, 4, 5, 6-year-olds who, by and large, are not heavily influenced by the culture. They're just kids who push on you. If you don't have the authority, and it's really very easy to get, very easy to get. If you don't have it, life just becomes ugly. And you think to yourself, I feel so bad because I don't like this kid. This is my child. I'm supposed to love him, and I do love him, but I don't like being around him. Well, look at it this way. Would you like being around any adult who acted like that toward you? That anything you asked or talked about with them that they didn't like, they'd throw a fit, they would defy you, they would scream at you? I didn't answer Stephanie's question. I should have. Stephanie, if you're still listening, I didn't answer this for you because you happened to mention in passing that he broke a window probably during one of his eruptions. And parents will say that. I don't know what to do when they do something that egregious. And typically, I advise parents, well, the first thing you do is you go take his favorite possession, his absolutely favorite possession, and you say, this is gone forever. Because you destroyed something in our house. Gone. Or is top two or top three. You're the parent. You decide. It's not me. I'm not giving you the formula. You know what you're allowed to do. And you can tell him in the future if he ever does that again, you're going to take his another favorite possession. And then also you could do this. You're on blackout for 5 days. In other words, for 5 days, given the offense that he did, he kicked a hole in your wall because he has a fit, or he punched you. This happens a lot. I'll get parents will come in, they'll tell me that 5, 6, 7-year-old's hitting them, punching them, spitting at them. I go, whoa. You know, in the Old Testament, one of the penalties for teenagers being disrespectful to parents, you know what one of the penalties was? Stoning. Now our kids just get stoned. That's how seriously it was viewed in that culture. I had a fellow that worked out where I worked out. And his name was Rahim. He was part of Saddam Hussein's army in the first Gulf War. He said, we really didn't know what was going on. They conscripted us. They conscripted us, and they stuck us out in the desert. They put us in these holes, and they told us to fight. And so when the Americans came in with their technology and their highly trained military, we were, forget it, man, what could we do? We're half of us were kids. So we got up, and we surrendered. That was the best thing we could do. And he said, I got up, and I surrendered. So they used Rahim. He was taken to the U.S., and he trains the military in some of the tactics in that desert warfare. I asked him, Rahim, do you have in Iraq the kinds of defiance, disrespect, and challenging that a high percentage of American parents have from their children? He looked at me like I just said, have you heard of electricity? He said, absolutely not. I said, well, wait a minute. You know, teens are teens, right? I mean, that's what our psychologists tell us they're supposed to be like. They're just feisty and disrespectful by nature because they're teenagers. He said, that's very rare in my country. Why? He said, because the parents are viewed as authority. The parents have authority. The culture views it that way. The whole culture views it that way. If you have a weak parent, you got the culture behind you. And I said, well, there's got to be those kids who just simply will not cooperate. He goes, there are those children. I go, well, what happens? He goes, they're asked to leave. I said, well, did it have to be a certain age? He goes, well, he said, in our country, it's 18. In their country, it's not 18. Their view is, if you are going to be this belligerent and uncooperative, defiant, even destructive, we can't have you here. Now, in America, that's viewed as, oh, my gosh, that is throwback. That is third world archaic stuff. But at least in their culture, they don't experience this incredible adversarial type stuff that kids treat their parents like these. I'm aghast. I mean, I'm a psychologist, been a psychologist for a long time, and I know back when I started, I saw all this, and it's only gotten a lot worse. And I'm just stunned at how much of this there is. Where the parents will say, my child's unpleasant, my child's uncooperative. I am not bothered by kids who misbehave. That doesn't bother me. Kids are kids. They're immature, they're unsocialized, they're partially moralized. I expect them to misbehave. That's the nature of the beast. The problem is the defiance of their parents' legitimate authority. Loving, caring parents. We're not talking pathological parents here. No doubt in my mind, Stephanie's a good mom. She loves her kids. But she's already, by age 5 of her son, experiencing this kind of frustration. And she used the word willful, extremely willful, I think was her phrase, which is how parents naturally view it. And in fact, in 90% of the cases, it's not. It's just a kid who's learned the dance. So I don't know what will turn it around. I do believe that the shrinks have done a lot of damage in the way they have new and enlightened psychological approaches to everything that are kinder and gentler. Yeah, if you can do that and it works for you, wonderful. But my office is filled with educated, caring, loving parents who tried to raise their children according to all the new and enlightened new ways and are getting eaten alive. Yeah, that's enough. 877. You want to get that final? Okay, I'll get to that when I come back. 877-573-7825. This is Dr. Ray.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
60 Seconds with Father Mitch Pacwa.
Take a look at our website, EWTN.com, and the old programs. I've so far gone through the encyclicals on Jesus, which is Redemptor Hominis, on God the Father, Divas in Misericordia, and on the Holy Spirit, Dominum et Vivificantem. Also the one on the Gospel of Life, Evangelium Vitae, and the one on Redemptoris Mater, Mother of the Redeemer. So I've gone through 5 of those, and you can get those off of our website. Again, the website is www.ewtn.com. And then when you go to libraries, what you can do is go to the audio library, and the audio library will have the old programs. They're all there, and you can just access them that way. May God bless you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
Hi, I'm Dr. Greg Popchak.
I'm Lisa Popchak. It's tough raising faithful Catholic kids in today's world.
How do you raise kids to stay true to their faith?
Find out in a new free webinar Greg and I are hosting called Raising Confident Catholic Kids. And it's happening on Wednesday, October 12th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time.
Sign up today at CatholicHOM.com/webinar. Remember, it's free. Again, that's CatholicHOM.com/webinar.
got an email from the lady, Katie McCarthy, who is wonderfully manages the Facebook page and the website. And Corey said, sounds like you got a cold. Well, you're right, Corey. But the one good thing about a cold is that I can do a better Rocky imitation. Yordran! My voice is low enough to do it. All right, let's go to, let's see, is that an anonymous? Yeah, I figured it would be an anonymous. From Kansas City, Missouri, kind of a touchy situation. Anonymous, are you there? Oh, not there? All right, I know what's going on. Maybe I can deal with it. Sometimes people will call and they get nervous about staying on, and then they have second thoughts. And the impulsive dialing of the number, once they are put on hold, they're thinking, what am I doing? Somebody's going to recognize my voice. Situation was this. A couple years ago, her father-in-law made a pass at her. And I don't know exactly what that means regarding a pass. Okay. She confronted him. He played it down. She says he ignored her, but he played it down. And she says, I find myself wishing the worst for him. How do I forgive him? Well, knowledgeable theologians and priests, teachers of the faith will tell you the first step in forgiveness is to get rid of the desire for retaliation. That's the first step. Wish no harm. Now, my guess would be that her anger toward him is because he hasn't acknowledged it. If he were to acknowledge it and say, I'm sorry, I wasn't thinking, I just was impulsive, it's terrible, forgive me, please. But no, he hasn't done that. And I don't know what she means by ignore her. Maybe he said something to the effect of, you're crazy, I didn't do that. Who do you think you are, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know. But obviously something in his non-response made her very resentful. And she wants him to get his. Here's the question. Is the lack of forgiveness hurting him or hurting you? I would imagine in the last 2 years, he's probably given it very little thought. Long gone for him. You, it still eats at you. View it for what it was. Something wrong. Something stupid, something he clearly shouldn't have done. Okay. But people do these kinds of things. And they do these kinds of things to us, to other people. So recognizing that will help you say, I must just put it behind me and move forward because it is reverberating 2 years later, causing me distress. 2 years later, the action itself probably took place over several seconds, but it's causing damage over 2 years. We have to allow that to happen. It isn't automatic. I had a friend once who, a fella in her church, grabbed her and kissed her. She was very, very, very upset. Very upset. Can't believe he did that. And as she described it, I said, you know, it sounds like he's on the front end of dementia. And sure enough, a few years later, he did die of dementia. But that bothered her. She said, how could that be? How could that be? And I said, well, look, what he did was wrong. But why are you allowing this to so distress you like this? Because what happens is when people do wrongs to us, if we can't get over it, then we're hostage. We're hostage to the wrongs that they have done. I don't want to live my life that way. I don't want to say because you offended me or did something wrong to me that I think is egregious, therefore,
I'm going to hold on to it. I'm going to cling to it, and it's going to create misery. I want to have the power to let that go. Caller, that's what I would advise for you.
Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor's Inn on KVSS Spirit Catholic Radio Studios. Walk with God. He'll help you to forgive.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRRay.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.